Hi, my name is Kathy Hill, and I'm talking today, Saturday, the 21st of March, 2015, with Barbara Browning. We are meeting at the Curtin premises of the Canberra and District Historical Society as part of the Curtin Living Memories Project. Barbara is a long-term resident of Curtin, having moved into the suburb in 1964. Barbara, you've been living in Curtin for over 50 years, but where did you come from originally?
I came from Bathurst, and I bought the block for my land in September, and it was one of those deals that I got a block of land and a house, and it was finished before school ended, and I was able to move on the 19th of December 1964.
Okay. So you came to Canberra originally to take up employment here?
Yes, I had an appointment at Forest Primary School, and it was to start in either the end of January or the beginning of February. I do not remember the date of commencement.
Okay then. So what made you choose Curtin to settle in?
Well, I had looked at Watson. I had looked at Forest. I had looked at a Red Hill house that they tried to sell me, had rising damp, which I knew about. And then we looked at something in Hughes, and I was told by the agent, without a grin on his face, there was no wind in Canberra ever. I didn't believe him. And I then found my southeast, well, facing block, or northeast really, a northeast facing block that sloped away from the road. So I got every bit of rain that came on my block. It ran downhill into my garden.
And that's worked out very well, isn't it? Because your garden is very beautiful.
Thank you.
So when you first came here, Barbara, did you face any particular challenges in establishing your home in Curtin?
Well, yes. It was very far from everywhere. They thought, you know, that 4 km from the, well, 4 miles from the post office in Manuka, well, not Manuka, where the parliamentary triangle, that was where their things were measured from.
Oh, right.
And it was 4 miles from there, and they thought I was in the wilderness. Everything, you had to go either to Fishwick to get any things like garden projects, like the pieces of sandstone that made all my edges of my garden. They all had to be carted. They very kindly gave them to me free because they were all different sizes. And they said, provided I came and got them, I had them for free.
That was well done.
It was, and with our rates at that stage, we got a beautiful allocation of, I think, 360. Now, I don't know what that measurement was, but I think it had to be kilolitres. It was part of your rates.
Oh, right.
And it covered sewerage the lot. Now you get 1 kilolitre of water and then, but it was very hard. The ground was not, it had been scraped absolutely, so we were on clay. I had had 3 loads of topsoil onto my block before I moved in. I had it rotary hoed the next day, having watered it all night the day previously. I sowed my lawn, even in December. We then had a half-inch rainfall the day I sowed it. We had a storm at lunchtime, and I discovered where the grass seed would like to be.
Oh, right.
Not where it was.
Okay.
And we also had a very large Great Dane dog, who we call Camelfoot, who had a happy habit of roaming through the gardens and leaving large, deep on my new lawn foot paw prints.
Right.
He was not popular at all.
No. Now, Barbara, I also, talking to you earlier, Could you tell me a little bit about the finance for your house?
Yes. My cousin, Brian Maher, was part of Bailey Davies and something, solicitors in Civic. I can't do the final partner. He was president of the Law Society that year, and he thought that I should be entitled to a government loan. I was the first single person, first single woman to get one. It was a 4% decreasing loan, and it was for 25 years. So the bank and I owned my house, and it was... he had to fight fairly hard for me to get that loan.
Mm. It was a different attitude those days to single women.
Yeah, well, the builder kept saying to me, no, you can't have the sink 3 inches higher or 6 inches higher. You're a woman and you won't fulfill your contract. No. But I did get up cupboards. He was definitely against having cupboards that were up.
Mm-hmm.
He thought I should be able to play in down cupboards, but there was very little cupboard space, but I wanted about double what was there. Well, he did get that. I had terrible trouble explaining to him I wanted sliding doors in various places. He didn't like those, but we did get them. But he didn't change the PowerPoints that were behind them.
Oh, right. He stood firm on that, did he? Never mind. You got quite a lot of the... requirements.
I had to pay extra for everything. And a carport that I had put in, they said to me when the application went in, it came back, we do not expect people in Canberra, in Curtin, to have cars.
Goodness.
So I'm not quite sure whether we're going to travel by helicopter or dragons.
They didn't have a bus service.
There was a bus that went to Russell, and I think one that went to Civic in the morning, and they were two coming back in the evening. But nothing, of course, to go to Manuka or to get to Forest.
No. So you really needed your own transport.
Although Carruthers Street at that stage was a dotted connection over the top of the hill to Melbourne Avenue, and that is why Carruthers Street is so big, it's a doubles and separated road.
Mm. And that didn't eventuate then?
No. The folk and deacon decided not in our backyard.
So it had ended at Kent Street. It ended at Kent Street.
Kent Street and Stonavon.
So what are some other vivid memories you have of your life in the early days of Curtin?
Well, I was terribly busy in the sense that trying to cope with school, getting schoolwork done, taking my dogs for a walk, and I took any small children who could possibly come too. They used to come for the walks in the afternoon with the animals, because everybody seemed to enjoy it great more. And each of the families that I had took one toddler with had a baby. And the little ones were so happy to be able to run and make as much noise as they pleased. For a whole three quarters of an hour or more, they could yell and run and scream. And then they came home and were reasonably good for having a meal and going to bed.
They worked off their energy.
That worked off their energy. To get some gardening done, it was interesting. My neighbours came and said to me, please don't work so hard in the garden. My wife is saying, if she's doing it, why can't you? And she's making curtains inside as well. Now, why can't you make a garden? Well, So I had requests.
You were raising the bar of excellence.
Well, I had 6 weeks to get it done before school started in the first holidays. Mm. And I worked from about just before light. I used to get up just before it got light and work, and then work inside after it got dark.
Okay, so you were really at it as much as you could.
And, yes, going to Mass, I had, with very kindly, the Anglican minister called on me the first morning I was home. And I said to him, "No, I'm not of your flock." "Oh," he said, "now, you're a Catholic." "Oh, now, Mass will be at Hughes Primary School at, I think, 9 o'clock. I can't remember that. Mm-hmm. Now, to get there, you go to the end of Theodore Street and it will turn into dirt. You go down that hill, cross a little splashy creek, and up there, and you'll find the primary school. I don't think you'll have any trouble finding the hall." So I thanked him very nicely, and that was by getting me to Mass before our parish started, which started on the 2nd of February 65, when Father Lynch was appointed the PP.
Mm-hmm. And so in the early days of the parish of Holy Trinity, did they hold the services over here in Curtin before the church was built?
Oh, yes. Once Father Lynch was appointed, the parish was huge because we then took Hughes, Holder, Warramanga and Curtin Lines were all part of our parish, God bless us.
Mm-hmm.
Father Lynch was there in the beginning. Father Drinkwater came in the first few months, I think about 6 weeks after Father Lynch. I can't remember the date.
Mm-hmm.
The Mass was held in the South Curtin School, and someone was alleged to be paid to put the seats out for us at the half past of the 6 o'clock Mass, and sometimes I was sacristing for Father Lynch, and I would get to the school about 5 o'clock and find there were no seats out. So I had two families. One were the Meads, and there were four boys at that house, and the house next door, I think they were Connollys, but that's not quite right name, but I used to call them the Persians because I just used to ring David Mead and say, "Please, could I have some Meads and Persians?" Because they had adolescent boys, and with six boys, we could get the seats out. But it was very hard work. And then after us, the Anglicans used it, and then after them, the Presbyterians used it. And
so it was a communal use.
Yes.
Okay, then. So in those early days, Barbara, where did you do your shopping and go for leisure activities?
Well, for shopping, I shopped at Monica because there was virtually only the little shop that where Delicios is. It was a bank, a Commonwealth bank, a post office, and every little goodie that you might like to buy, like bread, milk, and everything was at least twice the price of Woolies in Marnica, so one only shopped there on absolute necessities. Perhaps when we got a blackout and you had to go and buy candles and matches,
right.
Which happened. For leisure, I gardened, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I started to play squash, and I played squash in the squash courts behind the... I started with R and I can't do a thing. It was in Rudd Street.
That's right. Was that the Queen Elizabeth?
Behind the Queen Elizabeth building. It was, well, very near the Queen Elizabeth building, I think on the other side of the street of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there were five or six squash courts there. Mm-hmm. And I played for the Canberra, the ACT team.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then. So what are the most significant changes that you've noticed happening in Curtin since those early days?
Well, first of all, we got some shops. We got a shopping centre. And at that stage, we had two banks. We had Young's down where the gymnasium is now. We had a florist, a butcher, two greengrocers, I think, at one stage,
mm-hmm.
and two little small shops that sold delicatessen things, I would guess. I wasn't very prone to those or fond of those, so I didn't really know. But the butcher was very good and very nice. And we had a chemist called Mr. Smith.
Right. Okay, then. So that encouraged people to...
And we had... and we had Coles.
Oh, right.
And the post office. So we then were... Oh, we were in big time. People still shopped. Woden, of course, didn't exist.
No.
So Manuka would have been the biggest shopping centre. Mm-hmm. It was always still difficult about parking. Mm. And had only got worse. So that either you went into Civic, again, parking was a problem, or to Fishwick if you wanted things for garden, and of course, Bunnings didn't exist, but you had to find various hardware places.
And they were located at Fishwick in those days too,
yes.
Were they?
Yes, okay. Because Philip didn't exist either,
no.
So...
Right, it was really on the pioneering edge.
And you watched, the dust and the... Now, they were the dust in the first year, the dust storms, when the bulldozers moved, we had a very, very dry year. And Curtin was, in the afternoon, was one dust storm after another.
Okay.
As the... ground was all chewed up and the extra buildings went in. And also we had the lovely hot water meters, who screamed about between 3 and 4 when the reservoir at Red Hill was full.
Mm-hmm.
It put the pressure for these to the point, and every dog that ever existed woke up and screamed, barked, because it was such an unpleasant noise, not to mention their owners who sort of got up to tell them to shush.
Right. So that was an enduring memory from those early days.
Yes.
And you also remember the Curtin bridge being built.
Oh, yeah, the bridge over Carruthers Street. Yes, I used to watch that. That was one of the walks we went to. Oh, yes, and the sheep went past every morning for 65, probably 66. I'm not quite sure when Adelaide Avenue turned into Yarra Glen, but at that stage there were sheep that were moved across. They were shedded in the sheep shed, the wool shed at Yarralumna, and they walked with a shepherd and two dogs, and I had bitch dogs. And I learnt a lot of new words when the sheepdogs came across the creek to visit. But there was also a fox who used to have a drink in the evening. He came down dust on dusk. He was beautiful.
Mm.
He now would die of poisoning if he even had a lap.
That's sad. And in the early 70s, 1971, there was a very bad storm and tragedy there. Would you like to tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, that there had been rainfall for 4 or 5 days, and we had had something like 8 inches of rain over that period. The farmers who owned the land where the Carruthers Street Bridge is built had advised the NCDC not to concrete the bridge, the creek, because he said it was prone to flooding. The NCDC advised him that it had only happened once every 1,000 years and possibly we wouldn't live there to meet it. But on that night, there was a tremendous storm, and about seven, my friends, the Smiths, went across to Canberra Hospital to meet their eldest daughter, who has just come off ship. She was 19. Her younger sister Margaret and her very much younger brother, 6-year-old Michael, and two of their nieces who were staying, and they opted to drive home with Carmel in this little small, I think it was a Beetle.
Oh, right.
And the parents and Peter went in the car, the Holden, I think, that belonged to the parents. The parents splashed through the little creek. At that stage, it was probably only 2 or 3 inches high. Carmel came through it too fast, stalled her little car in it. She had not ever driven in water. She didn't know about it. She splat, and the children got out of the car to push the little Beetle across the last little bit. The parents were screaming at them to come across, but they didn't hear.
Mm.
And they could hear the wall of water coming that came down, and it must have been at least 6 or 7 feet over the top of the roadway.
Oh, goodness.
And it... Mm. Although Peter held on to Carmel's hand, he couldn't maintain, because she had one hand wrapped round Michael, the little boy, and they were standing against a little tiny wire fence, which was a netting fence, mm. that was alleged to be able to stop anyone being washed into the creek.
Mm.
And all of those children, the five children, were washed into that, and several cars were mm. also washed into, and seven people died in that night. Mm. I was at home. The girl, Lass, next door, came to me and said, "Will you drive my baby and me out if the flood comes up the little hill?" And I said, "No, it won't come up the little hill because it has room to spread out." But her husband was on driving a bus. She had a 5 or 6 day old baby, and she was very, very worried, and I would think very near to being hysterical for Lass, mm-hmm. with cause, of course, because she didn't know where he was. There weren't any phones. You couldn't sort of get in touch. I don't even know if we had electricity at that stage. We did lose electricity at some stage during that night, mm-hmm. but I think it was back on. And I went and collected her baby to be scolded by her, because I had used 5 or 6 nappies to put across the top of the cradle to stop him getting hurt as I came through the rain, because it was so hard. It was almost like hail.
Mm.
And she stayed with me till her husband came home. And I didn't turn on any radio because I didn't really want to get her any more worried than possible. And I didn't know till next morning when I went to Mass that the Smith children had been killed, mm. and that Michael's body had been washed up just a little bit south of a little bit past my house. Mm. The girls' bodies weren't found till the Saturday morning. It happened on Tuesday night.
Oh, that's a long time.
It was a long mm. time. And mm. the huge funeral in the church hall was the catalyst for having a church built in Curtin, to have the big church built in Curtin. Father Lynch had been pushing it for ages, but it did work as a catalyst to...
Mm. To cope with a crowd.
Well, it was mm. a huge crowd. I mean, you can imagine mm. 3 coffins sitting...
Yeah.
Yes.
So there have been some dramatic moments in yeah. the history of the suburb, haven't there?
Yes.
That's right.
And Mona was a friend, which made it even worse. And also my nieces were the same. My nieces and nephews in my sister's family were almost identically spaced as her children. Yeah. And I kept thinking, oh, if it had been the various ones of my family. Because Mona lost both her girls and her baby.
Yeah. So we're getting towards the end of our interview now, Barbara. Are there any other aspects of life in Curtin that you would like to mention at all?
There were tennis courts in Hughes that people played, but I didn't have time to play tennis because you sort of needed a whole afternoon to play tennis, but whereas squash you could play just a short period and you were exhausted and you could have a shower and you were finished. I didn't belong to that. I didn't belong to the gardening schemes because I came from Bathurst with an almost identical rainfall, etc., and I knew what kind of plants I could grow, whereas people coming from Perth or Brisbane or even Melbourne were encountering things that were totally different, and there were wild schemes of black plastic, newspapers and pebbles were the in things, and I knew, and God bless the department, in the plants they gave us, bamboo, vinca, major, periwinkle, and ivy were in the list that were allowed. And I had terrible rows with people saying, no, bamboo always spreads. No, 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 this bamboo's new. It doesn't spread at all. It won't go anywhere it isn't meant to. Oh, no.
And your wisdom has been borne out, I think, in
many
gardens.
I had killed next door's bamboo visiting, and I'm still chasing the vinca and the ivy from the other next door. So, no.
Okay, then, Barbara, I think we'll conclude our discussion now.
Right, thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing your memories about your life in Curtin.
Thank you.
Hey, good on you, Barbara.
Is that enough?
Yes, that's marvellous. You've been talking for half an hour, which is good. So
I hope I haven't had to be edited out too many hours.
No, it's fascinating.
Oh, isn't it just? Yes, that was wonderful. Thank you very much.
I could have done a whole lot of different things, but we didn't. And I meant to say about Lynn van der Steuren, who looked after the St. Vincent de Paul for the...
Oh, yes.
When the Vietnamese migrants... Because when Mr. Fraser died yesterday, it made the fact that the Vietnamese were... Because he allowed them to come, boat people, and they had to be accommodated in Canberra, and they found that, of course, the climate was horrendous to them. And Lynn van der Steuren, who had been a migrant herself, and she ran the shop at St. Vita P here, and I felt, I'm sorry that I didn't get to.
Well, when we have an edited version of the interview, maybe Barbara could just write that in, or...
Because it just seems that she should get a recognition of...
Did you run the one here?
The St. Vita P ran the... where the Beyond Queue is?
Yeah, downstairs.
Yes. And she was there, and she had people staying in her own house. She turned herself inside out to make the Vietnamese people welcome and to find clothes and food, because, you know, where did they get rice? Where could they buy rice in, you know, six kilo lots or not in?
Where do you get the ingredients you know how to use?
Well, now, but they had no money or very little money, so they had to be able to get access to their own kind of food in bulk. And
you know, so she organised those kind of things and probably, I don't know how she got woks or whatever them for them to cook on, so that they had, that they weren't being asked just to eat barbecues or or pizzas or whatever was stuff that, you know.
Would some of those people be the ones running the bakery?
They could.
Is that the Saigon bakery, isn't it? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
They possibly are. I don't know. I have never asked. Mm-hmm. But they certainly, we got a lot of Vietnamese people come. Mm. They were skilled. And I mean, you know, they couldn't get good jobs in the beginning. And it was, but she worked so hard for them. And I just would like her to get
a mention.
I wouldn't know how long she was. I know she came out and, because she got, poor girl, she came from Holland, and they had told her Canberra was a lovely sunny place, you know. Well, Australia was a lovely sunny place. And she'd given away all her winter clothes, and she got sent to the camp at Bathurst, which was up on Raglan Hill, and it was the windiest, coldest place. They nearly, and they came in July or June.
Oh dear!
And she, so her idea of being kind to immigrants from the wrong climate was.
Okay then. Well, we'll move off, and then
you go and catch your new person.